Steve said the S word. You know that.
Yeah, I heard it.
Not fun.
Steve.
Yes, Bill.
You can't be saying the S word on these airwaves. It makes us all look bad.
Well, the Sox were postponed. I have to do the news.
All right. All right. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Who knew a couple of years ago when I was doing stand-up that one of the guys that I would do stand-up with, Brian Regan, would become Brian Regan?
Brian knew?
Well, Brian knew.
I didn't know either, man.
Even you didn't know.
I'm more confused than you are.
How are you, Brian?
I'm doing great.
Brian, I heard you a little while ago. You were on Steve Cochran's show, and for people listening who don't know this, they passed state law about 6 weeks ago that Brian must appear on every show on the radio. That's a law.
Yeah, it's state mandated.
Yep. I'm proud to be a part of it. I'll be honest with you.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank
Absolutely.
You very much.
What didn't Steve cover that we should 10 minutes ago?
I don't know. I think we covered quite a bit in our short conversation over there, and but that the weather forecast. I'm thinking of canceling my Chicago show. What's going on there?
It's going to be nice indoors by the weekend too. It's supposed to be like in the 60s by Saturday, so
okay.
It'll be fine. And Chicago Theater, Brian, is indoor. I don't know if they told you this, but it's enclosed.
Oh, it's indoors.
Yeah, it's indoors now.
All right. Well, then I'll be on my way. I went to I grew up in Miami, Florida.
Yeah,
and I went to college in Ohio, and I had never experienced snow until I went to college, and I didn't realize that there was like a transitional period between hot and cold. Like all I brought with me to Heidelberg were like T-shirts and short sleeve shirts.
Yeah,
and I had like an Alaska pipeline jacket with the fur around the head.
Oh, the survival jacket. I think that's what they used to call them.
Yeah, exactly. That was it. I had nothing in between. And so, you know, my fellow classmates and teachers would see me with a T-shirt one day, and then the next day was the Alaska survival jacket. You know, there is a gray area, Brian. There's like you could wear a long sleeve shirt in between or a parka or something, you know.
There's middle ground. Yeah, there's always middle ground. Now, here in Chicago, Brian, I don't know if you realize this, but we've had weeks recently where it's been in the 70s and snowed in the same week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
We had one day, honest to God, it was in the 70s on a Saturday afternoon, and a few hours later, it dropped 40 degrees.
Yeah.
Man, oh, man.
That's where a hoodie comes in because it kind of is versatile.
Well, I'll bring everything I have.
All right, good.
Bring everything I have.
Brian, I'll never forget, there was a week that I worked with you in Kalamazoo, Michigan, at Zany's in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and they were so cheap at the club that they made you and I bunk together in the same hotel room, and you slept almost the entire weekend. Do you remember that?
Well, I'm that makes sense, you know, that I would have slept the entire time.
You were tired.
Yes, I was, and still do. That's what's so ironic about this right now. I mean, one of the reasons I got into comedy was because I knew I wouldn't have to wake up early.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
I swear, I was in college, and a guy performed at our school, and his show started at 8 p.m., and I remember thinking, this I can handle. I can handle 8 p.m. I can't handle these 8 a.m., you know, physics classes. And then, you know, I get to the point where, like, you know, I'm successful enough where I have to wake up early to do radio. So everything backfired. my master plan backfired.
Well, I'm not a morning person either, but I got up around 9:30 and you were still asleep. And I said, do you want to run and get breakfast? And you said, no, just give me a little more time. I just need a little more sleep. Went and had breakfast, did some shopping, came back. You were still asleep. I go, how about lunch? You go, you know, I'm not quite ready for lunch. I was afraid you had mono. I was sure that I was working with you during a week with mono.
Wow, that's exactly right. That I remember being in a condo with a comedian one time, and I woke up, you know, 3 in the afternoon, and there was a place down the road that sold meatball parmesan sandwiches.
Mm.
So I went down there. I got a meatball parmesan sandwich. I go back to the condo, and I'm sitting on the living room, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm eating my meatball parmesan sandwich, and he was like a health guy. He was on the floor doing these weird yoga stretches while I'm eating a meatball sandwich, and I had to sneeze, and I didn't want to sneeze in my sandwich, so I turned, and I sneezed, and I threw my back out.
Wow.
And I think, what a dichotomy between his life and mine.
Right. You know? Right. I think you're eligible for workman's comp based on what you just told us.
Yes, exactly. I should have been paid to not have to do a show.
Was it common that you guys would share a room?
No, hardly ever. But that particular week, they said, it looks like you guys will get along with throwing the same hotel room. We did get along because Brian just slept the whole weekend.
Yes. It was unusual for two comedians to have to be in the same room.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes they would do that. That was rare. When that happened, you quickly said, I want to be so successful that I get my own hotel room.
Right.
I want to get to that level.
Brian
but
Free.
They would also put us in these comedy condos.
Oh, the worst.
That was like an apartment.
Yeah.
That, you know, they would put whatever comedians were in town that week into that apartment. And you would, you'd get there. It's like, okay, it's my turn and two other comedians. You'd fight over who gets what bedroom.
Yep.
And you'd open the refrigerator and see like seven jars of mayonnaise in there.
Awful.
No one would ever use anyone else's mustard or ketchup or mayonnaise. Everybody got their own.
Yeah.
That was very strange.
Yep. Terrible. Terrible. Brian, a couple of months ago, they put out this list. Rolling Stone did the list of the top 50 comedians of all time. And not only was I upset that you weren't on the list, and Wendy and I talked about it here on the show.
They missed a bunch.
They missed some major names. Some classics, guys like Billy Crystal and
Richard Lewis,
Jay Leno. But some guys like yourself that belong on that list. Did you ever see the list? Do you know anything about this?
I didn't know that list came out, but... I just know from experience that I often don't get included in things like that, and I just learn to shrug it off, you know.
Is that why you sleep so much, Brian?
Yes, because I don't want to read articles like that and start feeling bad. I sleep through all of that bad press.
Oh.
That's the way to, you know, get over things. I'm with you on the sleeping. Bill said he would wake you up to go get breakfast. I'm one of those people, I'd rather sleep than eat.
Yeah.
And now with this rain, it's like perfect nap weather. Will you nap when you're in town?
I will. I sleep in, and then I get up, and I'll eat something very unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will take a nap before my show.
Brian, there was another list Rolling Stone put out, the 50 top comedians who sleep a lot, and you were number eight.
Number eight.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're talking.
John Biner edged you out by one
John
position.
John Biner.
Now, I think I should be in the top two, but I'll accept eight.
Eight's not bad. Eight's not bad. So how many years has this been now for you in stand-up? You've been doing this about 30 or so years, right?
I started right out of college, and... went right at it. There was a comedy club that opened near where I grew up. I grew up in Miami, Florida. There was a comedy club that opened in Fort Lauderdale. And it was perfect for me because I was like, wow, I can go there and try to audition. I passed my audition after a few tries, and they gave me a job working there in the kitchen, like cooking burgers. And
yeah.
I would also seat people, and they would let me go on for a few minutes each night. And when they let me open the show... Sometimes I was the cook. I'd be in the back, and the waitress would come back and go, you know, I need two burgers or whatever. I'd put the burgers on, but I knew that if I was the first comedian, I would put the burners down really low. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you'd have time
Yeah, and I would get on stage, and I was not only the comedian, I was the people in the audience's cook. They didn't even know it. And I could hear people while I was on stage asking the waitress where their burger was. And they had no idea that the cook is on stage in front of them. You know, you're not getting your burger until you laugh at this guy.
You know, you could have done it as such where you brought out a small grill on stage with you and just cooked up burgers while you were doing the stand-up.
I wasn't that smart. I should have done that. Yeah, I should have had a grill up there.
You know, I don't know if you'll remember this, but I asked you once after having worked with you a couple times, because you were always good, but at some point you went from good to really, really, really good. And I said, what are you doing differently? And you said, I learned that instead of telling jokes, act everything out. Everything becomes a scene. And that's true. You started doing that, and everything took off for you.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't remember having the eureka moment, but apparently I had it. And enough to explain it to you, but I wish I would have remembered that or known it before that. But yeah, to me, the bits one of the first times I sat down and actually tried to script out my act, you know, I thought, hey, maybe I should put some work into this. And I was scripting it out, and I realized these are all scenes. They're like vignettes, you know. It was always me and another character. It was me and the eye doctor, or me and a flight attendant, or me and a salesman.
Yeah.
Or it was me and an inanimate object. It was me and an ironing board, or me and a refrigerator. And I thought, these are little moments, and the only way they're going to work is if I put on my actor's hat and play it out. So yeah, that's sort of the deal.
Boy, it's paid off beautifully. You're just doing so well. I'm so happy for you. So this Friday night, it's the Chicago Theater. It's a big venue. Have you been there before, Brian? You've done the Chicago Theater before, right?
Yeah, I've done it a couple times before, and it's very historic, and, you know, it's a thrill to perform in places like that.
Well, in this city, I can't think of a place that says, I'm doing it right, than the Chicago Theater. If you're doing stand-up there, you've nailed it, so congrats. And there's some tickets still available, not a lot, but go to the chicagotheater.com if you want to see one of the premier comics of all time, Brian Regan, working there. Brian, great to hear from you, and continued success.
Thank you both very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
Take care.
All right, you too.
That's Brian Regan. I'm not kidding when I say this. You need to see him. He is so funny and so good at what he does. I can't say enough good things about him.
Well, you mentioned the tickets, and we actually have a pair to give away. I was going to offer them to Brian first.
Yeah.
But I guess he doesn't need them.
Dibs on him.
So do we want to give some away right now?
Yeah.
All right, here's what we have. A pair of tickets to see Brian Regan, Chicago Theater. As we mentioned, it's happening this Friday, April 7th. April 7th already.
Yeah.
God, I was Christmas shopping just a week ago, it seems.
I'm almost done. You got two more people to buy for.
Great seats are still available, as Bill mentioned, and they're on sale now. You can go to Ticketmaster or the Chicago Theater box office, or you can call us right now, 312-981-7200. What number caller do you want?
Let's do caller 10, 312-981-7200. Be caller 10. See Brian Regan. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I felt like such a slug yesterday. Here's why. Yesterday when I got home from work, it was the last few innings of the White Sox game, so I watched it. Then later on, the Bulls were on, pivotal game, so I watched it. The Cubs were on, I watched it. The Blackhawks were on, I watched it.
Did you have sweatpants on and have your hands in the top of the waistband?
That's what separated me, Wendy, from your average sports slug is I put on a tuxedo. I watched it with champagne and a tuxedo. But I didn't watch the whole event. In any of those, I didn't watch the game from start to finish. But I put in my time on all four games yesterday.
Have you ever done that before? Because I can't imagine you doing that some reason.
I have. Back in my gambling days, on a Sunday afternoon, I had that package where every football game was on, and I watched not the whole game. It's impossible, but 10 minutes of that game and 5 minutes of that game and 4 minutes of that game, and it stacks up.
Wow.
I'm not proud of it.
You shouldn't be.
I still worked out. I still did a two-hour workout, but I did watch four sporting events yesterday.
I'm not accusing you of not working out. It just doesn't seem like that's up your alley. I would see you watching some independent film before sitting there watching all the sports games.
Well, here's the weirdest part of it. None of those games were pivotal, really. I mean, the Bulls would be, of those four, it's really important now that they win most of their games. They only have a couple games left if they want to get to the playoffs.
But it's kind of pathetically pitiful.
Yeah.
Or pivotal, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, the Blackhawks have assured themselves the top spot in the West.
So why even try? I mean, I know they should, but, you know.
Well, you want to have some momentum going into the playoffs, so that's important.
But you also want to save some of it and not get injured.
That's the key. Is like right now, I would have Marian Hossa in an ice chest, just laying in the ice chest. Don't touch Marian Hossa. I don't want him to be hurt in any way. He's too fragile. But game two for the Cubs, not necessary. Game one for the White Sox, you know, opening day, so why not? But, yeah, that was a lot of time to watch sports. I sent my wife an apology letter. I'm sorry. I've been an absent husband today.
And she sent you a thank you note.
Right.
Did you have a nickname for yourself? You know, a sports nickname?
Just Bill from Evanston. Like, if you call a sports show, you can't just have the name Steve or Wendy or Bill or Kevin. You have to
Billy Boy.
Where you're coming from.
Billy Boy from Evanston.
Yeah.
We need to congratulate Timmy Boy, Tim from Chicago. score to our Brian Regan tickets, because I see people are still calling. So we need to say congratulations to Tim. He's going to go see Brian Regan at the Chicago Theater this Friday night, April 7th. Great seats still available, on sale now, Ticketmaster, or you can go to the Chicago Theater box office.
If you're not Tim and you didn't win the tickets, go see Brian anyway. I also want to give him heavy points for this. It's G to PG rated humor. You can bring the whole family to see Brian. There's nothing objectionable in terms of language or content. Yeah, it's as clean can be.
That shocks me in this day and age, quite honestly. It really does.
Those guys are fewer and farther between than ever before. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Because it's harder.
You can bring everybody and everything.
Who wants to bring their kids on a night out?
Well, I guess.
I say that and I do it all the time. What am I talking about?
But it would provide, like, if your kid has never been to a venue to see stand-up comedy, this is a good way to indoctrinate them.
It's the guy, it's the venue.
Yeah, yeah.
It's family-friendly.
Yeah, it's very family-friendly. All right, we'll take a break. Steve will give you the news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All of us.
Online. WGNradio.com.
Spring's around the corner, which means it's time to get outside and have some fun. For me, that means finding a great patio in the city to post up, have a drink, and enjoy some great food with someone special. For that, I turn to It's Just Lunch. And here's how it works. A professional matchmaker will first get to know you during a confidential interview. They'll then hand-select quality matches for you from their exclusive membership base. It's Just Lunch pre-screens all your matches in advance and even books your reservations at the best date spots in Chicago. All you have to do is show up, relax, and be yourself. My matchmaker, Catherine, got to know me, and she sets up some really fun dates. They're easygoing. We talk about our jobs, where we're from, and I've had nothing but great experiences. The best part is It's Just Lunch makes it easy. It's not always a quick bite for lunch. You can always meet for a drink after work or even on the weekend. It's stress-free. So call 312-881-5225 or visit itsjustlunchchicago.com. That's 312-881-5225 or visit itsjustlunchchicago.com to learn more.
Thank you, Steve. Bill, Pat McGann's here. Do you guys mind taking your conversation on the air? Would that be a problem?
I don't know if it's appropriate. Pat, it's up to you.
No, I was just commenting how you had me following Brian Regan. It's like, we have John Cangelosi today, but first... Babe Ruth's calling in.
Right. It'll be fine.
I ran from my car to get into the green room to hear the interview with Brian because it was funny you brought up that list, the top 50 of
the Rolling Stone.
Not on. To me, that delegitimizes the whole list.
That list was really stupid.
Well, isn't it subjective in that anytime there's a list of the 50 best anything, ice cream flavors, presidents, whatever...
It's intentionally provocative.
Yeah,
but Kevin Hart, for some reason you have so much hatred for him. I'm not really sure. I think you're jelly. But he's not anyone that should be on that list.
As a working comedian, I will not comment on anyone that should not be on that list.
Right.
But I will comment on who should be, and Brian Regan for sure.
Wendy and I had 18 or 19 names of people, and people called in, listeners called in and said, why isn't this guy on the list? Why isn't that guy on the list? But to not include people like Jay Leno, who, even though his Tonight Show years were a little shaky sometimes, he did great in the ratings. As a stand-up comic, as a club comic, Jay Leno was unparalleled. He was so good at it.
Right.
So but that's,
I didn't know he wasn't on it. That's
spoken
ridiculous.
From two comics, though.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know that I would have put Flip Wilson on before Jay Leno.
Not in front of Jay Leno, possibly in the top 50.
More than Kevin Hart?
Oh, way more.
What I've heard about Leno is that his material, just the amount of
reams
material.
And reams and reams.
And that's Brian Regan, too. Like, I've heard Brian Regan would do shows at a club on Friday night, the two shows, and you could stay for both.
Yeah.
He would
different
do a different
stuff.
Really?
Show.
Yeah.
Wow. How do you remember that stuff?
And clean.
Yeah, always clean.
Always clean.
Yeah.
I'm not like a snot about being clean, but it is much more difficult. It's just.
It is harder.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's, he's just so. So funny.
Was there, when you decided this was going to be your path, that stand-up was going to be something you would take a shot at, was there a guy or a couple guys or women that you thought, they're doing it a certain way that I like, I'm going to try to do something similar or in the same vein as they're doing?
Yeah, and I think some of it was just driven by, like, I was going to do stuff that I would not be embarrassed to do in front of, like, you know, my family and having people out.
Yeah.
Boy, that's
so
a good rule,
like,
honestly.
Yeah, but it wasn't. But at the same time, I love you know,
cutting edge
crude
stuff.
Comedy.
Yeah,
like,
right.
I, you know, watching Delirious growing up and Eddie Murphy, and like, so I love that stuff even to this day. Like in the club, like it's different than me, but you know, doesn't mean that it's not great.
But does this happen to you every once in a while? Like I'll watch Amy Schumer's a good example. Mm-hmm. I'll watch an Amy Schumer special, and she'll get into some stuff that I say. What if Amy's mom or dad were at the club that night and they heard their daughter talking about that? I don't know if I could pull that off, but she pulls it off.
Yeah, by buying them a car.
Right.
Yeah, house. And Amy Here's Schumer, when she first came out, I was enamored with her. I really was. I loved her movie Trainwreck. And then sometimes I feel she was just being dirty for shock value. Like, I feel like she could have gone funnier.
I think some comics do that. Some are just, you know, they just... Again, they just are provocative for the sake of being.
Yeah.
You know, they almost like, you might, you can imagine some of these comics, like they have like a list on like, what are the hot button issues? Like, I'll address that.
Right.
But, you know, some people do it really well. Some people are, you know, and they have a longer leash because of who they are, you know?
Yeah.
I saw
that's
Louis
true.
C.K. I was saying at the, I saw him at the Chicago Theater. He blew me away. And I wasn't necessarily like the biggest Louis C.K. fan for no other reason than I don't watch a ton of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I pick here and there if you hear some buzz and then, but I wasn't, you know, hadn't consumed a lot of his stuff. He was phenomenal.
What do you make of a couple months ago, Sebastian Maniscalco played the Chicago Theater. I want to say, was it seven shows or eight shows?
Six.
Six shows.
Over Thanksgiving?
Yeah, that was Thanksgiving weekend.
Sold them all out. You were the opening act on there. So what you got to see him. You got to know him a little bit. What did he start doing? What was the turning point for him where he was doing regular clubs and all of a sudden he became like a superstar? Do you know what the change was for him?
Well, it's funny. I had a conversation with him. We just did a bunch of cities in the Northeast and we were traveling like on a bus. Mm-hmm. So we had some conversations.
Tour bus. Yeah,
tour
excellent.
Bus, yeah. And he was saying that he just came across some footage of when he used to do stand-up, like mm-hmm. when he started. And he was kind of like stand and deliver and not animated, didn't have much of a point of view. And kind of like what your conversation with Brian Regan was, he just, something clicked that he just started acting out and doing more, bringing more energy and being, you know, we've all done it, like, speaking as comics, like on stage, sometimes you're just more in the moment.
Yeah.
And if you put more into it, you get a bigger response. You know, those act outs matter.
For someone who's not a comic, you a former one, Bill, and you a great current one, Pat McGann. What turned me on to Sebastian was social media, because I saw a clip of him talking about his doorbell. You know,
right.
In the old days, the doorbell would ring and you'd be so excited to, oh, my God, who's coming over?
Sure.
And being half Italian, it was like that was exciting on a Sunday afternoon. Your mom always had a coffee cake ready for whoever came by. Now the doorbell rings and everybody hides and it's like, don't move. And that, like, moved me.
Yeah,
I had
hilarious.
Never heard of him before.
His stuff is very relatable. And what I really respect about him is he didn't take, like, everyone has a different path. But his path was not really influenced by some kind of machine behind him. He did it on his own.
Right.
And he really got this rabid fan base. It started really in Chicago for this region. It started with doing Zanies. He was doing Zanies. And all these people that would never come to comedy clubs started coming out. Like, all these... people would, you know, mostly Italians, and they're coming out from all over the city and showing up in, with their big night out, like getting, renting cars and
getting all floozied
down.
Up.
I mean, it was just like something you didn't see at Zanies typically.
Yeah, right.
And he then rode that to, you know, the next level, doing small theaters. Now he's doing large theaters and, you know, he's comedians in cars getting coffee. You know,
right.
It doesn't get bigger than that as a comic.
But look at this. All right. So for some of these guys, they figured out I need to make it bigger and more animated. But if you look at guys who do a more deadpan style of comedy, Ray Romano, Norm MacDonald, Todd Barry, guys who just lay low, it works for them. They figure out how to play it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you can't sell it unless it's really you. You know, if you're
trying to be someone you're not, it's not going to work.
People get to smell that on you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I've tried some stuff that does not fit. Really like my persona, and you know,
like
it might
be
funny.
What did you try that you thought, well, this can't miss, I'll just give this a shot?
Was this maybe something about it was just dirtier, you know, maybe
really,
like, it doesn't fit in. I talk so much about being married, having kids, and then you know,
they didn't buy the audience said,
we know
who you are, and that's not you.
Mm-hmm.
How
and that's
about
all
that?
Part of it, right?
It's you felt weird doing it too, though, didn't you? You didn't feel like it was truly you.
I felt that it was funny.
Okay.
But, yeah, I probably, you know, something like that is just it's clunkier in your act. You don't even know where to jam it in. You know, kind of like shoehorning in there, and then people are like, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
Do you not watch other comics for fear of you know, someone accusing you of stealing material, because it happens a lot. We'll talk about something on the show. We'll see it on Weekend Update or something. And for a half a second, you're like, oh, I bet they were listening. But a lot of people can think of the same joke.
Well, sure. If your subject matter is just anything you're grabbing out there that's in pop culture or in the news, and you're going to have parallel thoughts, that's just going to happen. I try and be very, like, biographical, like just stuff going on in my life, and then that makes it less likely. You know? Some of your premises might be the same, but it's your
a different take.
Yeah.
The reason we originally had you on, Pat, was to publicize an event that you have coming up, but the event is sold out. Kudos to you for still coming by.
Yeah, of course.
But when we come back, I want to talk about the event anyway, because it's a very, very important cause, and other things with Pat McGann. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is our number. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Pat McGann is here for two reasons. He's got a benefit tomorrow night, and because Wendy's doing a book report about him.
I will.
Double spaced. Must be double spaced.
I love the book report.
What
I always
want to
do
pick?
A book report on like one of those books that's just like a question as the title.
Yeah.
Know, like, who moved my cheese?
Right.
Like, it was Jim.
Done. I'm finished.
Make a diorama.
I'm totally finished. All right, so tomorrow night, there's a night that Pat Tomasulo from WGN Morning News is behind, and it's called Laugh Your Face Off, and you've been kind enough to participate in this. The downside of this is tickets are already sold out. The event is sold out, but people can still donate. What do we need to know about this?
You can go to laughyourfaceoff.org, and I'll tell you what, one of the things, you can not only can you donate to such a great cause, Pat's wife, and many people are fighting this terrible battle with trigeminal neuralgia, and it's just, it's unbelievable pain, and there's not a lot of answers for them, so they're raising money for research, and there's not a lot of people raising money to fight this thing. But anyway, you can go to laughyourfaceoff.org and make a donation. But there's also an auction, an online auction that has some great stuff. There's Hamilton VIP tickets. There's a Cubs Ultimate Fan Experience. There's a Blackhawks package that has like post-game player meet and greet.
Oh, man.
You can get some luxury stays locally and nationally, too. There's the Gwen Hotel here. There's a Tropical Paradise package, spa packages. So go to laughyourfaceoff.org and click on the auction, and you can check out these items. And there's some steals right now. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. Like a 7-night all-inclusive tropical vacation for four.
Nice.
I mean,
very nice.
It's only at like $2,000 right now.
Oh, very, very nice. So it's yourself. It is obviously Pat Tomasulo. And do we know any other names on the show?
Leon Rogers is going to be there.
Yeah.
Mike Toomey will be there. Megan Gailey. Very funny.
It's a good show.
Woman, she started here, and she's out in New York now. She's just on Conan. So, yeah, it's a really stellar lineup.
I love when comedians come together like that for a good cause.
Right.
It makes it funnier, even.
Get
it really
away.
Does.
Get out for the night.
Yes.
Do it.
So true. I don't know if you have experienced this yet, but I've experienced this for you. In the old days, if you were in a band and all of a sudden your band took off, you could turn on the radio and your band would be playing on the radio. And you go, well, now we've made it. We're on the radio. I've heard you several times. I'll be driving along, and on satellite radio, they have a bunch of comedy channels, and there's you. Has that happened to you where you're driving and you go, that's me, I'm on
radio? I don't have satellite radio.
But, yeah, you're going against what we do for a living,
will
by the way.
Send me a picture of the, you know, they'll take a picture of the track playing in their car and send it to me, and that always feels good.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
cool.
Nice.
It's fun.
Yeah, you're a traitor.
No, I want
to listen to us.
I can't.
You guys aren't on all the time.
No, we're not on all the time.
I guess.
Do you ever turn yourself on and hear you guys listening?
That's the wrong question to ask Wendy.
I turn myself on all the time.
You don't want to know.
Someone has to. No, because we're here.
I was kind of.
Oh,
but obvious. Do you know what happens to me is when I got the job here at WGN, and I've been on other stations, some with Wendy, some other. I get texts from family members and friends, and the text would say words to the effect of "You're on the radio right now,"
right?
But I knew that because I was on. Not that shocking to me.
I love that too. Like when we're at it, when you're at a venue. And I've done this to you where I'll see your picture at a club that you worked in the past. Or I was out at CDME in Frankfurt, and there was a big spread of you.
Yeah.
And you did a remote out there.
Is that in your tuxedo?
Probably.
Yes.
I like
you
to dress for success.
You should wear a tuxedo more often. You look very handsome.
I don't know. Maybe I will.
Dapper.
I don't know.
Pat McGann is here. Where is the venue, speaking of venues, for Laugh Your Face Off?
It's at the Laugh Factory.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's, what's that, like Broadway and Belmont?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I called you a couple of months ago because a commercial that you had done, and you broke the news to Wendy and I at a remote. you were in a Kellogg's Frosted Flakes commercial.
Yeah.
And cinnamon. I finally saw it.
You did?
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. You
it's
did a nice job.
Tough to recognize me in there because I got like this orange headband on with this hair. And I saw it with my daughter the other day. You know, she's like five. And she was like, Dad, you're...
That's you.
Here you are. Yeah. I was like, yeah, that's my that's where I go when I'm not home. That's my other family.
I have another
daughter, and we live with a cartoon cat.
Did she wonder if they get better Christmas presents?
Yeah.
That was all she cared
looked at
about.
Me like, you're a jerk.
You should have said this. Don't ask me which one I love more. Don't
yeah,
ask
right?
me. Nobody's business but mine.
That was fun. That was a random thing that I got that. I feel like this girl, this little 10-year-old girl, was such a great actress. And she like carried me through the audition.
Really?
Like, I'll ride this girl's coattails, and yeah, we got it.
But
so
that can
out.
Work the opposite, Pat, because I've had a couple auditions where it's me with a kid, and the kid has been a total spaz,
right?
And I'm done. They
right.
just say, "Well,
that's
you guys
why
aren't
I am all
work.
About giving this girl credit because there are some kids that I just, yeah, they totally cost you. Like you're like, what are you even doing here? Yeah. They don't even want to be there. It's like their parents are.
Well, I'm watching them right now. We can post it on our Facebook.
Can
page
we put a link up so
yeah,
people
of
can
course.
See Pat's? Pat's
cinnamon
more serious
frosted
work.
Flakes.
They're telling me sales for these have never been higher since
yeah.
they added this commercial.
I ate it all day that day. It is
you
funny.
Do, don't
it's a
you?
15-second commercial, and it's just hilarious. Like that was all day. That was 8 hours.
Now, did they do this thing for you? Because my wife has done a couple commercials. They call them bite and smiles. So what mm-hmm. you do is they give you a kind of food, and you take a bite out of it, and you smile at the camera like as if to say, boy, is this good stuff.
Yeah.
But they'll give you this little what they call a spit jar.
Sure.
Because after
what?
You eat the cereal or the hot dog or whatever you're promoting, you can't do it for 6 hours in a row. You have to spit it out.
Yeah.
So they give you this little bucket.
It's like dipping.
Yeah.
It's a little spitter. No, I was eating it. They were telling the girl to pace herself because she was really diving in. And they're like, you got to. But they also measure it out. Like you have to have. There's like a rule. Like how much serving is. Like
yeah.
almost like count the flakes out. First, they have all the flakes out. They're hand-picked flakes
yeah.
that they put in
oh,
the bowl.
The most
ones.
Photogenic
There's
flakes.
A certain amount of milk that has to be measured. That's
yeah.
also like a standard thing. They have to follow these standards that are, I don't know who
Truth
develops
and advertising.
Them. Yeah.
yeah.
It's amazing like how detailed everything is.
Wow. Wow.
And it was funny. We shot it on location in Deerfield, and turned out I knew the people whose house we shot it at.
Really?
I used to work for the woman who owns a house, her and her husband. I used to work for her dad. And I was in the house for like the whole day. And then I finally had to like go in their bedroom to be
had to
stationed for the next this shoot. And I'm like, wait a minute. I know these people. I saw their pictures.
Yeah, right.
It's hilarious.
That's boy, the odds of that.
In, yeah.
The odds
I gotta
of that.
Tell you, you look really good in a headband. You blow Mike Reno from Loverboy away.
You should
I
always
need to start
headband.
Wearing that.
You should. And get advertising. Get like Kellogg's to advertise
yeah.
the headband.
I just love that they're still running it.
Yeah.
It'll be on our Facebook page, too.
They might stop in April, I heard. But
oh.
if they keep running it, that's great for me.
All right. Well, it's up to us to make a created demand for this. So I hope you get many more of these.
Thank you, man.
Pat, other than the show tomorrow night that is sold out, the Laugh Your Face Off benefit, do you have any other dates here in town that people can come and see you that you know of?
I don't have a ton of local stuff coming up this summer. I'll
people
be
will travel.
Zanies.
Where are you? In the Midwest? Somewhere in the Midwest.
I'm going down to Texas. I'm doing another Sebastian run down in Texas. I'm going to be down in... where else do I got coming up?
Texas is close enough. People will drive out.
Yeah, right? Come on down to Houston.
Right. That's about the limit. They'll go to Houston, but no further than Houston. Arlington, out of the question.
I'm doing a gig at... where am I? Yeah, I'm really just kind of out of town. I'll
Why
be back
you...
in June. I'll be at St. Charles Zanies and Downtown Zanies.
We'll come back in
Rosemont.
June.
A lot of June. June's my month.
All right.
Then come back and
I'll
talk to us then, all right?
It's Pat McGann sure. month. Yeah. June is Pat McGann month.
You can follow me on Twitter.
I'll
at McGann Pat. No? No?
I'm not interested.
Let's get t-shirts for Pat McGann month. We can even get headbands.
All right. You want to do that?
Let's do it.
Sold. Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it. It's Pat McGann. Go see him in Texas.
And go to laughyourfaceoff.org.
Thank you, Bill.
A quick break, then some news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. All right. We have Dr. John Duffy on the show on a regular basis every other Wednesday. He's a clinical psychologist. He's written a book called The Available Parent, which is awesome because we all try to be the best parent we can be. He's a parenting and relationship expert and a certified life coach. So, John, let's talk about we all need some coaching. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to do some spring cleaning for the soul.
Let's do some spring cleaning. I like that idea. So one thing that hit me this week, and part of this was what was going on in my office, is people often come to my office feeling like stagnated, disempowered, like in their lives, their relationship, their careers, and they're not sure, like, what am I going to do to kickstart things? And in the end, what you find is that the reason that people fail to get where they want to go, even though they can envision it, they picture it, they've been dreaming of it for years, is they fail to set intentions and really clear goals that they can kind of break down into smaller goals so that they can start to think about, like, okay, so this is where I want to be a year from now. I want to lose 15 pounds, or I want to change careers, or I want to get into a relationship, or whatever it is. And if you have that in mind, then you can start to think, okay, so what do I have to do in the next 6 months, the next 3 months, this week, and then today? Like, what do I do today to start moving toward that goal? Mm-hmm. And what I find people do that throws them off more than anything else is they fail to protect time. So they'll say, like, this is what I'm going to do today. I'm going to work out for, you know, half an hour, which is great, right? But if they don't say, like, it's going to be between 2:30 and 3, then it becomes like, I hope I protect some time, you know, but somehow the locus of control becomes outside of them instead of them just deciding. And I think once you decide and you intend to get something done, then it gets done. And that's the piece we're missing. We're just hoping, like, you know, I hope that I get where I want to go. I hope I get that promotion. I hope I lose that weight, you know, and hope I love, but it is not enough to get you where you need to go. You at some point have to set intention that is abundantly clear and act on that intention.
Realistically, John, is it okay for a person to say, I'm going to set a set of goals for the day, for the week, for the month, for the year, for the 10 years, for the 20 years? Like, what are your intervals that you want in your head to be playing off of to keep yourself on a schedule?
You know, I think it's great to have when you get to 10 to 20 years, I always figure you're looking at dreams. You're looking at aspirations, like big, big time. I think you have to break those down into something that's manageable, too. And you want wins. You know, I find that people get discouraged if they can't break something down small enough where within a week they can't look back and say, okay, that was good. I'm moving ahead. But if you say, like, you know, I want to host the Tonight Show in 20 years, to say, you know, like, oh, yeah, this was a good move this week to get there, there's just not enough objective evidence in there to get you where you want to go. You know what I mean? So I think you have to break it down into smaller pieces than that. I think it's great to have dreams and aspirations that are big, and I encourage everybody to do that. But you have to have goals that get you there, and they have to be broken down, you know?
All right. So what if you're the queen of ADHD and you have a difficult time making long-term goals, but then just one day I wake up and say, I'm going to do this today. I don't like to plan ahead. I just like to wake up and say, I'm going to do this today. Can you set goals once you're already starting to do something you enjoy, or do you have to pre-plan everything? I'm not a good planner.
No, I don't think you have to pre-plan everything, but then I think the good feeling is going to come from what you did today. And it's not going to fit in a bigger picture of what you're going to achieve a year from now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I know it's really hard, especially when you have an attention issue, to think like really, really long term. And in that situation, I always encourage my patients to like document. I want you to document like specifically what you want to do, because once you've got it down on paper, there's this degree of commitment to it that you don't have when you just say it. Because when
you just
say it in an hour, then it's kind of like, okay, it's out there. But you can renege on that tomorrow, and it's raining today, so I can't really get out there and run. You know, like you can make
excuses
so readily. And the excuses come easier when, and this is what gets in a lot of people's way, when people don't feel entitled to what they want.
Yeah.
So oftentimes people will say, like, you know, I want to run a marathon a year from now. This happened with a man I was working with a couple of years ago. He was overweight at the time, had never run in his whole life. And I remember he took his running shoes that he had just bought, put them on the ottoman between us and said, I have no idea even what to do with these things.
Yeah.
You know, and he started with these really small goals of just walking around the block, walking around two blocks. And he figured, well, if I can walk around two blocks, I can walk around six blocks. And if I can then jog around two blocks, eventually I can run 26.2 miles. And he eventually did get there over the course of 1 year.
What a smart way to do it.
Right?
Yeah.
So he had to break it way, way down into something where he created little wins for himself every single day.
But that helps you want to proceed then with your goals.
Yeah.
Because I'm impatient. I want, like, it's all or nothing with me. So to me, small steps are like big deal. But then after you finish that step, you're like, wow, I did that. I can do this now.
Yeah. And there's that feel good, right? There's that win.
Accomplishment, like, you know,
right,
is what it is.
Right. And it's empowering. And it makes you really believe, okay, I think I can get where I want to go. And the other thing you have to be prepared for is where you want to go, and this is going to sound so counterintuitive, might not be where you want to go. So you get this vision for a year from now, mm-hmm. and then as you work your way toward it, you might realize, I don't know if I really want that. I might want something different. And I think you have to be flexible enough to shift your goals as you go, as long as you're working toward them.
And that doesn't come across as a failure. Like, say, for instance, let's use the marathon again.
Right.
And then as the two blocks become six blocks, become a couple of miles that you're walking, and you're like, I don't have any desire to do that anymore. That's not a failure. It's just your goals have changed.
Your goals have changed. You've made a shift. And you've delved into that world. So you have a feeling for what it is, and you might recognize, like, okay, I'm willing to commit a certain amount of my time and my life and my energy to this, but I'm not really willing to commit, 3 hours a day to it. So I'll make this part of my life, but this isn't going to be my primary goal for the year. And then oftentimes people will find something else because sometimes this goal setting stuff is addictive because the wins feel good.
Oh, yeah. You know
what I mean? Like each win feels pretty good.
I keep on my desk at home, there's a to-do list that always has a dozen or 15 things on it. And a lot of days I'll look at it and I'll go, I'm going to get 3 or 4 of these done guaranteed. If I get more done, that's a plus.
Yeah.
But 3 or 4 must be crossed off the list today. And when I'm crossing them off, it's weird because it's just it's a pencil on paper. But I'm like, yeah, I pulled it off.
The to-do lists are so gratifying, and especially if you break them down, right?
Yeah.
I mean, into something like, make that phone call, like write that paragraph, something
sure.
that not like finish the book,
Right.
And then you can really feel like, okay, every day I'm taking these little steps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a plus. All right. Dr. John Duffy is here. If you want to chime in, 312-981-7200 is the way to do it. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're talking with Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist. You can listen to his podcast, Undo Anxiety. It's at WGNplus.com, or you can find it on iTunes or where you find your other podcasts. Also, go to his website, drjohnduffy.com.
I just heard his Cajun broadcast, Andouille Anxiety, and it was spectacular, John. Loved every minute of it.
Why are you in marketing?
I'm glad you enjoyed that.
Oh,
I'm trying to
good.
Expand the cultural limits of my podcasting.
I think that was the first time I actually heard the audience groan.
I know.
Like, through the radio.
Right. How did that happen?
All right. I heard on the news today, we all know about this Facebook Live attack. A Chicago girl was sexually assaulted. Word came out that this young victim, I believe 14 years old, was told that a pit bull was going to attack her if she did not participate in this. And it turns out 40 people were viewing this on Facebook Live. Bill and I were talking about this off the air. Until this came out, you stumble across something on Facebook that you're not planning to see. At first, you'd think, this isn't even real.
Sure.
This is some weird stage thing. And then it's like, if I know you finally realize I got to do something about it, but like, who do you call? I mean, I guess knowing this now, I would call 911 and say, here's the screen name of the person. I see the page. This is disturbing. Maybe you should look into it. We all need to kind of help each other.
Right, right, right. And that's probably kind of the next phase of taking care of each other, is recognizing when something goes on online and it really rings that it's happening, that we need to do something to take care of each other. Part of what prevents us from doing that is just the fact that it's one removed, because we're watching it on a screen as opposed to seeing it on the street. But you might remember from Psych 101, this idea called the bystander effect, where if there's a few other people around and nobody else is doing anything, or one person's doing something, then you feel kind of licensed to step back
and not get involved.
Act, right? So the press now, I think, has to be, Yeah, you have to act. You have to think about, would I regret not acting on this, not calling 911, not reaching out to some kind of authority? And I think you're right, Wendy. We're in a new age where we really need to take care of each other because, you know, people who perpetrate this kind of thing are clever and they're going to find new ways to challenge us and shock us. And if we don't do something to counteract that in real time, then it just opens the door to more of this.
But what's missing in a person's psyche where they think that doing something like this is A, acceptable, and B, that they can get away with it? How does that play in?
I think part of it is that wish for infamy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, that I'm going to be seen and I'm going to be known.
Yeah.
And some people feel so desperate and hopeless. And I'm not looking to feel a whole lot for the people who perpetrated
right.
this.
That and they're young boys,
yeah,
some of them.
Yep,
it's
yep.
very disturbing.
It is. It is. But it's probably been, to some extent, modeled for them. You know, maybe not online, but sometimes, you know what I mean? There's this kind of like, there's this mimicry that young boys often do of older guys, you know? And if they see like, oh, wow, somebody got a whole bunch of attention for doing this awful thing, then I might be willing to do that. It doesn't necessarily address the idea of the fact that it's an awful thing,
yeah.
you know, and that's the disturbing part is we don't know exactly what's driving these guys. You
yeah.
know, that's something that my field is kind of scrambling to figure out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
There was another video going around. I think I saw it on Facebook, and it was a fake mugging that took place in an elevator. There was a guy choking another guy. So when the elevator door opened and innocent bystanders were there when the door opened, you could see their reactions. Some people like screamed in horror and ran away.
Mm-hmm.
One guy, you know, jumped into the elevator and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" and tried to break them apart. They showed another woman who like almost like rubbed her eyes like, is this for real?
Yeah.
And she had her cell phone, so it looked like she was calling authorities. But it's weird to see the majority of people just kind of walked away.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're hoping somebody else is taking care of it. Because it's ugly and they don't know what to do. They don't want to get hurt themselves.
And
right?
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Bill, we've talked about this before. If you saw someone being attacked, you would jump in and try and break it up. Thinking of if my husband did that, I would be mad at him because what if he ended up getting hurt or killed trying to save someone else?
Right.
I know he would go out a hero, but then I wouldn't have him anymore. So I guess, if anything, you should definitely call 911. These people who the door opened on were alone, so it's not the bystander effect. They didn't think
nope.
someone else is going to – maybe they thought someone would come upon this later, but it's happening right then and there.
Right, right. So there might not even be time to call
right.
911. And it's interesting because I think some people's impulses are like yours, Bill, where it's like, I'm going to do something about this
yeah.
right now. I'm not going to let this stand. I think I have that same press, like, you know, well, we don't have the luxury of time, so
right.
we've got to act on this. And I think what we want to do is foster more of that action in people instead of, like, you know, just setting back and becoming observers, because I think we're becoming in a way, because we have so many screens in front of us, this nation of observers. We're kind of like, you know, and so things are kind of one removed from us all the time, even in the elevator. You know, you got this woman rubbing her eyes as if like, well, this doesn't seem real, you know,
right.
and so I don't even know what to do about it. But I think the more we decide, I'm going to do something, I'm going to dial that number or step in and intervene, even though I'm putting myself in some kind of risk, then I think we stem the tide. Because you're right, Wendy, more of this stuff is happening, and it's not happening over the course of years that we're seeing more of it. This is happening in the course of weeks, right? I mean, a month ago, we wouldn't have been talking about this.
Yeah.
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 Anna wants to jump in on the conversation we're having. Anna, we don't have a lot of time, but we're here with Dr. John Duffy. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I'll be real quick. It's terrible when someone just like stands by and lets it happen. But at the same time, sometimes these situations can bring out the very best in people. Like, I won't give out his name or where it happened, but one time there's this one bully at my high school, and he was really nasty and everything, and nobody really liked him. And then all of a sudden one day he caught a teacher in a, shall we say, compromising position with a younger student, and he went ballistic on the guy. And he's like, as it turned out, he really turned around, because what people found out was apparently he had lost a little sister to a predator.
Wow.
And so that is like, he may have, like, afterward, he just, like, really straightened out, but maybe because he finally got, like, he felt like he got some say in it, and he found, like, maybe, like, having finally managed to save someone, he felt like he didn't have to hate himself anymore so much. So as horrible as it was, he protected that freshman girl, and the teacher went to prison for the rest of his life.
Doesn't that prove that there is good in all of us? It's just whether or not we tap into it.
Everyone was like, while he wasn't a nice guy while he was a bully, he was never actually physically aggressive towards any like of the students, really, particularly the girls. And now everyone understood why, because he had, like, it had really messed up his family. And it's like, and I can see why, but it's like, when seeing that, he snapped and he went like totally ballistic, and the guy wound up, he put the guy in this, and this teacher was bigger than he was, and he put the guy in he put him in intensive care, and like, everyone was like really shocked, because this teacher was really well liked, but apparently she wasn't the first, but apparently at the same time she was apparently the last.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that, Anna.
Yeah.
Are you on spring break or something?
Actually, I'm in college now, so.
But you remember this.
Oh, yes. Everyone remembered.
Thank you for calling.
Have a good week.
She sounded young to me.
Yeah.
Well, if we just do something, you know, even screaming or making a loud noise will disrupt something that's happening.
That's something I was thinking of when Anna was talking, is it sometimes doesn't take much, because, you know, bullies, you know, they're not as courageous and brave as we think they are. And sometimes it just takes words to just get them to back off.
So
and,
true.
Yeah.
John, thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. It's Dr. John Duffy. Listen to his podcast. Read his book, would you? It's Bill and Wendy. It's WGN. Thanks, Kim. Something big coming up later. You know, we do this this podcast, this streamcast.
It's not a podcast.
What is it again?
All of our...
What is it?
It's a...
That's what I mean. It's not.
I guess
it's hard to.
It's a bonus hour.
It's a bonus hour,
Kevin.
Because it's a live stream.
That's what it is.
Is usually recorded, so you just play that whenever. But people have to listen to you on the stream. I mean, they can go back,
but it's live as it happens. You can listen to the podcast version of it.
When was it recorded, Wendy? Do we know?
It's going to be recorded.
Oh, it hasn't done. It
when
hasn't
we
happened
do
yet?
It.
Oh, I thought we did it years ago.
But you can slip on over to the stream at noon, and you might want to today, because one of our favorite guests, Tamar Manassa, is going to be here. She is the founder of MASK, Mothers Against Senseless Killings.
Mm-hmm.
And she has just done amazing things where she creates love and hugs and after school feedings for people in neighborhoods that don't have a lot going on. And
right.
She tries to show people that lives do matter and all lives matter. And there's spring break time going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants to create something for these kids to do so they're out of harm's way. So she's going to talk about that.
Excellent. So that'll be on the bonus hour, and that starts at 12 o'clock.
Good work, Bill.
All right. Well, that credit goes to Kevin. All right. I don't know if you saw this or not, but I think this is fascinating. And maybe because I'm a collector of odd things, but maybe not.
Tell your kids that.
I know. the oldest known something in the world is about to go to auction. I don't want to tell you what it is. I want to see if you can guess what it is. It's the oldest known something in the world. It's going to go to auction, and they expect it to reach around $80,000. That'll be the price tag for the oldest one of these, the oldest in the world.
That's not a lot of
money.
What
could it be? $80,000? When I tell you what it is...
An abacus.
No, it's not. No. Abacai have been around for a long, long time.
I love when you speak Latin. You know how Gomez drove, what was her name?
Morticia.
Morticia. I was going to say Natasha.
Morticia drove Gomez wild.
When she spoke French.
French, yeah.
But when you speak Latin, that's what happens.
It does the same? Yeah.
Abacai.
You're not going to kiss Wendy's arm all the way up?
No, I'm going to kiss his arm.
I'm watching.
So what could it be? What was invented? Should I tell you how long ago? Will that help you or hurt you?
Yeah.
It was invented in the 1890s. These have been in existence since the 1890s. They will soon be 124 years old. What could it be that is expected at auction to sell for $80,000? The first known of this in the world.
I would like to use a lifeline, and I have reached out to Donna. Donna, right. Why don't you take my guess for me?
Is it jewelry?
No, Donna, it can't be jewelry because jewelry dates back into the BC years. They've had.
I loved that comic strip.
No, not the comic strip. The actual concept of BC. It's jewelry's been around for thousands and thousands of years. It's not jewelry. A nice try though.
Sorry.
All right. That's okay. Thank you, Donna. Can I reach out to another lifeline?
A second lifeline? If
yeah,
you want to, sure.
Marlene, I want to guess. I need help. What should I guess?
Levi Strauss jeans.
It is Levi Strauss jeans, Marlene. Well played.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
Very, very well played.
Welcome.
How did you know this?
I saw it on TV.
Oh, you did? It was on TV? Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Did they show a picture of the jeans on TV?
Yes, they actually did.
How did they hold up over 124 years? Were they okay?
They looked real good.
Did
and they show the different buttons and the, like, studs, I think, were on them.
Yeah. They were button fly, I would imagine, because that was the original Levi's.
Right.
And no belt loops.
No.
Really?
No.
Mm-hmm. No belt loops.
No.
Hey, Marlene, are you a Cubs fan?
I love the Cubs.
Why don't we set you up with a book we have, The Cubs Way, The Zen of Building the Best Team in Baseball and Breaking the Curse by New York Times bestseller Tom Verducci. It's available everywhere books are sold, and you can get a copy right now, Marlene.
Oh, thank you, Wendy.
Thanks
for helping
Marlene.
Me. And can I get your home number so you can be my lifeline for everything?
Oh, call me anytime.
All right.
Hang on a minute.
Done. It's impressive to me, first of all, that a pair of jeans that were made, and again, these are the first known jeans,
Levi Strauss,
from the 1890s. And I'm trying to remember, wasn't there a specific brand of Levi's for a while called 1890s in tribute to these jeans? But it's impressive that they've held up 124 years. That's unparalleled. How could anything hold up that long?
Well, I don't know that these were worn, were they?
It doesn't say. Does it say anywhere if they were actually worn or if they were just a concept? Maybe they just made one to say, look, this is the kind of thing that we can be making and make a lot of money on. Maybe that's what it was, like a demonstrator pair, maybe.
It's weird that you remember 1890 as a brand. I think it is.
Well, they did for a while, right? Didn't Levi Strauss have their 1890s
brand? I think that was the Gap.
Was it the Gap?
I think it was. I know Levi's have the 501, which are the button fly.
It may have been the Gap. But why would they, if this was a Levi thing, why would the Gap muscle in on that and say, oh, no, 1890s, that's our era?
Because they're trying to steal business away from Levi's. They don't sell Levi's there.
No, they don't.
I know the 527 are the slim boot cut because that's what my boys wear.
Yeah.
I like Levi's.
Yeah, it's hard not to, right?
Although, don't you recall that Levi's were moderately priced?
Oh, very much so.
They used to be.
Right, not anymore.
No.
No.
I can't believe it.
No, but all right. I know that the popularity of blue jeans hit probably in the 60s, right? Like, for the most part,
yeah.
Blue jeans were supposed to be, the goal was to sell them to people that were like farmers,
right?
And stuff.
Because they were durable.
Yeah. They weren't looking at them back then as a fashion statement at all. But then in the 60s, the counterculture of the 60s, they're like, all right, well, we know you've got your regular pants, but we don't need those kind of pants. We'll go with denim pants.
Was Elvis one to get the blue jeans underway? I know he did a lot of...
I don't think of Elvis when I think of blue jeans. It's possible, I guess.
I
maybe.
Think of Eddie Cochran. I don't know why.
Yeah?
I do.
Do you? Yeah.
I could see him wearing blue jeans.
Yeah, maybe.
Or James Dean.
James Dean wore them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But James Dean usually played, like, James Dean was only in three movies. But
isn't that unreal?
Yeah.
That he was only in three?
Yeah, to be the legend the size of James Dean, but only be in three movies. In all three of those movies, he played more of a farmy rebel hoodlum type, you know?
Yes.
Right? If you needed a farmy rebel hoodlum type, you got James Dean, but there were only three movies, so... Hud, Giant, and East of Eden. That's it. Three movies, in and out. I've only done two. I'm one behind James Dean. I'm going to be a legend if I get one more movie under my belt.
Well, work on it. Are they doing another major league revisited?
They won't return my calls.
Oh, Bill.
That's all right.
Somebody says these jeans they're talking about were never worn and only had one back pocket.
Oh, yeah,
pair.
I guess. Well, I mean.
They only have one hammer.
They
or a sickle.
Right. You know what's funny is every once in a while, and it's been years since I've done this, but I'll buy a pair of jeans that has a loop or something on the side, and that's to put a hammer in, isn't it?
Yeah, those are carpenters.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to stop buying those.
Yeah. It's been a while, but I do
you
remember.
You still have some. I saw them last summer.
With a loop?
Yeah.
Do I? Oh, I have a pair of shorts, because that's
yeah,
a good
shorts. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To wear shorts that have a hammer on the side. Why wouldn't you want that?
That's how you accessorize.
People won't come near me on the street when I'm walking down the street. That guy's dangerous. He's got a hammer in his, shorts.
We have to take a break and then Levi's talk. Jean talk.
Yeah.
Blue Jean baby. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy. 720 WGN. I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans. Oh, come on. It sounds just like what I thought it was.
This is a song called Forever in Blue Jeans, about somebody who wears blue jeans a lot, but you thought it was.
My whole life, and I am not bad at incorrectly identifying yeah. lyrics to a song. My whole life I thought it was Reverend Blue Jeans.
So it would be a holy man
yeah.
who always wore blue jeans. Reverend Blue Jeans.
It sounds just like it.
Neil Diamond is spinning in his grave and he's not dead.
That's a he's good
just,
trick.
He's just sitting in a grave spinning.
You were talking about the oldest pair of Levi's that is expected to fetch how much?
Well, they expect it to reach at auction this week $80,000. They were created in the 1890s. They're 124 years old. They just found them in a trunk, and they're going to put them on auction, and they expect it to reach somewhere. Auctioneer Daniel Soles says somewhere in the neighborhood of $80,000.
Can I get an $80,000? Do I sit here? you mentioned 1890. Is that when they were first constructed?
Yep.
And then you thought maybe there was an 1890 pair of jeans, and we thought it was the Gap. And Debbie, you can clear this up?
Yes, I can. I'm old enough to remember when the Gap first opened.
Hmm. So that would have been in the 50s or 60s?
You know, I think maybe even early 70s.
Yeah, it was the 70s.
That's when the Gap opened? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so when they first opened, they only carried Levi blue jeans.
Not their own brand.
And the reason I know this, not their own brand, and the reason I know this is because they had a jingle that sang about their blue jeans. Their
Hold on one second. I think Kevin has found that jingle.
Ball into the Gap now. Get to the Gap.
That is it.
I remember the ending. Wait, Kevin, don't play the ending because I know the ending. It goes like this. Fall into the Gap. That's how it ended. Yeah.
Yes. Was that Joe from Hard Rock Oklahoma
Joe? It was Joe. Yeah. So those commercials played in the 70s?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
You know, I worked at a Gap. That was my first retail job.
Oh.
And I don't, that was probably in the 80s, and I don't recall them having Levi's at that point.
No, they didn't have them a really long time, because then they did get their own label. But the Gap was not a real, it was just comfy clothes at first. You know, it was not anything fancy. They pretty much carried jeans, like a Shetland wool pullover sweaters and mm-hmm. button-down shirts.
1969 is when the Gap store first opened, according to Kevin.
Okay.
And they weren't in every, they were few and far between. They weren't like now where it's every shopping mall has a Gap. You had to search them out back then, right?
It was huge to have a Gap in your mall. Yeah,
yeah.
It was a big deal.
Very prestigious.
Thank you for answering all the questions, Debbie. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Deb.
Bye-bye.
All right, we were talking about, I guess we questioned when jeans first became a staple. And, Jerry, you know when jeans kind of happened?
Well, I might be mistaken, but I thought that the Navy used to have blue jeans. The guys would wear bell-bottom blue jeans on board. And
with white T-shirts.
Pardon me?
With white T-shirts?
I think they were like light blue, but if you watch old reruns of McHale's Navy, Gruber
Man,
and the boys, I think used to wear bell-bottom blue jeans.
See, I don't think those were jeans, though. Those were more of a
navy blue, hence the name. I don't think they were denim.
I don't know. We're going to have to check out some YouTube on McHale's Navy. When I was on the fire department, we had some bosses that were Navy guys.
Yeah.
And in the 90s, they issued us denim bell-bottoms to wear around the firehouse.
Oh, nice.
And under our fire clothes. The guys hated them because once they got wet, they were heavier than heck, and it took forever for them to dry out. And they're real tough to tuck into your boots.
Oh, they would be, sure. Yeah,
because they were these huge flared-out bell-bottoms. They were kind of – it was kind of crazy. But and one last thing, I've got a pair of jeans at home, and it says in there 1969. It's a Levi. Oh,
but that was a brand for a while too. Now was that Gap or was
that's
that
Gap?
Because
that's when
Gap.
They first started.
Yeah,
1969.
Right.
But 1890s, anyway, you're thinking.
Yeah, so I'm going to look up McHale's Navy, but right. if anybody's out there watching that. But that's all I got. Have a great show.
Well, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Now, this first pair, Wendy, that is going up for auction, and they think it'll get somewhere in the neighborhood of $80,000, were owned by legendary pioneer Solomon Warner. He's one of the men who helped settle Tucson, Arizona. He was 6 foot tall, 6 foot 6 inches tall. He weighed nearly 300 pounds. His jeans had a 44-inch waist and a 46-inch inseam.
He's tall, man.
He was a tall man.
6'6".
They called him the John Wayne of the Old West, which is ironic because I thought John Wayne was the John Wayne of the Old West, but he is not. It is Solomon Warner.
Do you know what that little pocket is that you probably still have on jeans to this day?
The real small...
Yeah. It's a pocket within a pocket, usually on the right side. Kevin, you check your pants, you have them. Everybody has that. You know what that's for?
No, somebody told me once, but I know it's not right.
What did they say?
To put your wedding ring in if you're at a singles bar.
Okay, A, who told you that? Two, why did you listen to
that? I don't want to say his name because he's a prominent Chicagoan.
He deserves to go down.
I know.
That's not what it's for. It was made in the original pair, I bet, that has it too, for a pocket watch.
Is that what that's for?
And
that
they just kind of kept it on to leave it as a little detail of the original jeans.
Yeah. Mayor or a Bishop Supich. What does he know?
Lightning is going to hit you. We have to take a break.
All right. Hold on. There's a break, and then we'll talk to Steve Bertrand next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.